Go deep. I want you to go deep. Let the music take you deep. We're going to cover some deep stuff today.
I am singing to you. Do not dry the ocean of my love. Sing with me, with your soul, and you will receive the answer which I receive. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desire, with the fires of my destiny. For thee I cry, for thee I weep, I cry no more, thou mine ever more. Thee I find, behind the fringe of my mind, hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, my, leave me not. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desire. For thee I weep, I cry no more, thou mine ever more. Thee I find, behind the fringe of my mind. Thee I find, behind the fringe of my mind. Hide no more. For thee I weep, I cry no more, thou mine ever more. Thee I find, behind the fringe of my mind. Thee I find, behind the fringe of my mind. Hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, my, leave me not. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desire, with the fires of my destiny. For thee I cry, for thee I weep, I cry no more, thou mine evermore. Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. Hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desire, with the fires of my destiny. For thee I cry, for thee I weep, I cry no more, no mine ever more. Thee I find, behind the fringe of my mind, I hate no more, Lord, I hate no more.
try to go deep. Dive, dive, dive down into yourself, into your heart and below. Just sink into yourself or fall back into yourself. Let the music take you.
Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan. Hey, Bhagavan.
Now pay attention. Who hears my voice? Who is it that hears my voice? Look deep inside. Where is that witness? Where is that knowledge? Who hears me? Who hears Ed? Plunge deep inside. Look for him. For her. Who hears my call? I'm calling you. Who hears me? If you find nothing, what does that mean? If you find nothing, what does that mean? Who hears me? Speak up. Who hears me? You know, I get asked every day by someone in a comment or an email or on the phone, how do I practice? What's the best practice? Or why aren't I making any progress? I've been doing this for 3 days now and I'm not enlightened. How come? What a fucked up method. 3 days I've been working on this. Other people feel they're moving too fast. Emotions are flooding them. Drama and trauma are flooding them. Please slow down. You know, most people that come to satsangs anywhere are merely curious. Let me try you out, they say. If you strike some resonant chord within me, I'll stick around if you're lucky for a few weeks or a few months. If you're lucky. But I probably will dump you like I've dumped every other guru because they weren't entertaining enough, or they weren't deep enough, or they weren't smart enough, or they didn't have enough love, or they had the wrong technique. But then there are those who are more than merely curious. They have a deep passion to awake. But mostly they haven't investigated why they want to reawake. They just say, I want to get out of here. I just want to get out. But why? What's the motivation? What's the pain? What's the drive? Look into that. You have to know that before you know anything else. Why do you want to get out? What's so bad about this place? Outside of the Republican Party. And those who have come and are highly motivated and are willing to practice and maybe even looked into that reason why they want to awaken, there's still problems. Some come so filled with knowledge from reading books and seeing teachers, they know everything. They're so filled up. There's no humility, no emptiness, just perfect knowing and they check your knowing against their perfect knowing, and you're always found wanting. Then there are those who are always filled with activities. They're juggling 7 or 8 balls at once, and 2 of them have to be spiritual. They've got kids. They got a job 84 hours a day, 216 hours a week. They read 6 books a week. They go out 8 times a week. To get drunk twice a week. And they wonder why nothing's coming through. Why nothing's sticking. The 20 minutes of meditation they did on Wednesday hasn't brought enlightenment. What a shitty world. 20 minutes and I don't get it. Then a third set of people come filled with pain. Sometimes it's on the surface, sometimes it's locked deep down. A lot of emotional blockages. A lot of human deadness. And this usually has to be unlocked before progress is made. Let me tell you, there really is no progress. One day you're not awake, and the next day you are. One day, one moment, the illusion is seen through. The world is seen to be just images, concepts which your mind has created. Then you're free. Or at least the path to freedom is open. You begin to see your way. But what about before this awakening takes place? What about all the shit I go through? Is it necessary? In the late 70s and early 80s, there was a big time spiritual writer, still around, Ken Wilber, who wrote a seminal book called Spectrum of Consciousness, and another one, The Atman Project. And he postulated that, you know, the psychoanalysis postulates a development in children from the time of birth until the time of 10 of certain cognitive structures, certain ways of knowing, certain ways of perceiving, as well as one's personality structure, the ego, Freud called it, and others call it objects relations people. The internal objects, which are the internal structures by which we perceive other people. The feelings of love, the feelings of integration, the feelings of morality, the ability to control our emotions, ability to mate with another, to bond with another, the ability to tolerate extremes of emotions, the ability to tolerate different viewpoints. All of these are built into the ego structure, and most of the development takes place by the age of 7, most of it, but actually by the age of 3. By the age of 2, some people can begin to observe themselves as different from the others, and they refer to themselves as I. And all of these are thought structures inside that become integrated. The child is able to observe an apparent world out there that is created by its mind and teachings. People teach it. Mama teaches it. Papa teaches it. Teaches you how to be in the world, too. Stiff upper lip, or a quivering upper lip, or a loose upper lip, whichever kind of parents you had. And all of these structures are inbred, and they contain our feelings. But into this, almost every life's huge trauma comes that disrupts this developmental complex. Death of a father, a divorce, child abuse, sexual abuse. Something always happens to screw up this developmental sequence. And psychotherapists or psychoanalysts talk about, well, you don't need to have a perfect parents. You just need to have good enough parents. Good enough to get by, to get you through. But a lot of people don't have good enough parents. Or they don't have any parents. Or they're the kind of person that is, let's say, by constitution, very sensitive and highly reactive. And even a good parent and holding parent can't completely contain all of their feelings and allow their structures to develop in the proper way. All of these people develop what we call neuroses or psychoses or personality disorders. And there's a whole millions of them outlined in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. My Bible. I use it all the time for reaching diagnoses of people that do evaluations. It's got hundreds of categories depending on symptoms and behaviors. Borderline personality disorder. What are some of the other hot topics? Narcissistic personality disorder. And all of these describe the kinds of symptoms people have, like a borderline is emotionally eruptive, a lot of anger, and there are different kinds of depressive disorder. People have a depressive core that they regress to every now and then, and they feel very depressed for long periods of time, either because of the death of somebody or some other thing. But Ken Wilber hypothesized that you can't go to the place of abandoning the ego until you have a well-formed ego. A schizophrenic, for example, cannot become enlightened because he really hasn't a well enough formed ego to transcend the ego. It sounds paradoxical, but a schizophrenic can be very close to being awakened, because they don't have all of the structures that a lot of people have in order to deal with the world. And those well-formed structures are what prevents you from seeing through the world, and that spirituality works on. So Ken Wilber hypothesized that you had to be emotionally healthy in order to get into spirituality, to become transpersonal, to go beyond the personal. The personal has to be fixed either first in psychotherapy or originally with good enough parents. Or if something went wrong, you go back and repair it. You repair that emotionality. Then you can get into spirituality. It's a transpersonal model. I fought that model a lot in publications and so forth. Because to me, the whole personality was just a concept. Just a network of thoughts tied together by which we structure the universe. So, how do I deal with people that come that are highly motivated, have looked into why they want to get out of the world, have dealt with some of that pain, who are too busy, or have a lot of emotional blockages, or have too much knowledge already? You know, there's very little I can do. I have to wait till people are relatively empty and are motivated. You know, my problem was always pride. I had too much understanding. I had read too many books. I had seen too many teachers. By the time I met Robert, I was through with spirituality. Thought it was a bunch of shit. I got nowhere. I was so full of myself. My self-assurance that all of this is bullshit. But I didn't see all the way through the bullshit. Saw 3/4 of the way, but I was full of myself with arrogance of knowing. I was puffed up with knowing. That was my weakness, was knowing. I knew everything. And what did it take to break through that? 7 or 8 years of being with Robert and knowing less and less each year. Trying to become good for nothing. And Robert was very good at making us good for nothing. Become more and more dysfunctional. You care less and less about things. Your memory goes because you're not paying any attention. And if you paid attention, you'd still forget. The world doesn't make sense much anymore. Not like it used to, when it was solid. Now it's developing holes. So gradually I was becoming useless. And it felt so good. There wasn't so much to do anymore. Everybody's expectations, including my own, were lowered. I could relax. But then Robert left. He went to Sedona. I failed to follow him. I was one of the ones that was instrumental in having him move to Sedona. I tried to move. I really tried. I really did a couple of times. But it didn't work out. And I finally realized that one time I was talking to Robert. He was up at Sedona. And I said, Robert, I can't take the cooking anymore. You cooked me too much. I need some rest. You're always complaining about me. Always talking behind my back. Always putting me in situations where it hurts so much. I can't take it anymore. I want to rest. I got him to move, but I failed to move with him, and thereby lost him. And I became lost. I felt desolate, a failure. The arrogance was gone. I was no longer full of myself. Full of shit, maybe, but not full of myself anymore. And so I gave up. And I got what was equivalent to one of these MP3 players a long time ago. The cassette players. And just listened all day long to sacred music. And to Robert's satsangs. Laid down on my couch and listened to them. Listened to Robert's talks. Listened to these chants. And I gradually felt happier and happier. Happier and happier. I was desolated, but I felt happy. I was laid low, but I felt happy. The chanting increased my happiness. Listening to Robert's words increased my happiness. Then one day I took a shower and I woke up. Just suddenly. No warning. No warning. Then a few days later, I had a second awakening. More profound than the first, but gentler. Now, what was it that caused me to wake up? Was it the 30 years of meditation before I met Robert? Was it being with Robert for 8 years and becoming useless? Was it learning to learn less and less? Was it Robert's going away and my feeling of desolation? Being laid low? Was it the chanting music? Was it listening to the satsangs? Was it having given up the whole thing? I don't know. I know listening to chanting is very important, and if you could do that, and his talks all day long, my talks, it'd help a lot. You would feel happier and happier. I ain't even going to make a special tape or tell you to be useless and you can play it over and over again. Don't do anything today. Don't think today. Don't do anything with the kids today. Don't phone your parents. Don't feed the cat even. Don't do anything today. Become useless. So what was it? Why did the illusion dissipate that moment? So people come to me and say, what to do? What practice should I do? I don't know. You can practice self-inquiry, like Robert says, and Ramana. You can abide in the I am, like Nisargadatta says. Or you can go through all kinds of emotional movements. Or you can lay on your back and listen to chanting. Or perhaps you could become of service. Go to a hospice. Rescue animals. There are a million things you can do. But it's really important to do something. To have some sort of movement. I think more than anybody else, right now Joan is moving so quickly. And part of it's because she is listening to chanting music all day long and all night long. She listens to Robert's talks, to my talks. She's 150% committed to herself. Not so much to awakening, but to awakening her heart right now. Janet also. Catherine, I believe, although I haven't talked to her that much. And of course, Joanne, who's working her tush off all the time for our satsang. But now I'm starting to cook her specially. And through cooking her, I cook Alan. I've got you all in my mind. I'm working on all of you in my own way. But because I'm lazy, I'm slow. So you have to do some of the work yourself too. I highly recommend you listen to chanting music. Okay, let's have a nice maybe we should have some questions at this point, if anybody has any questions. Comments. You know, at Mount Baldy, there came the time where you went to see the Roshi for your one-on-one meeting with him. I think it's called Doka-san, or that's the Soto. I forget what it was called in Rinzai. And everybody would be very slow to go because they were just coming out of a deep meditation. So we had this Japanese monk, they called him Chikijitsu was his title. And this guy was Ryosho and is about 5'3", 5'4", but muscular. One day he got so upset that nobody was moving. He got off of the tan and went one by one down the rank of the people sitting there and pulled them off and threw them onto the floor, told them to rush up to Roshi. Now, I don't know who our Chikijitsu is, but maybe Joan. She's getting pretty mean. Joan, do you want to go after these people and make them come and say something to me?
Okay, everybody go say something.
Oh, that was forceful.
I know.
Hello, Edgy.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question.
Yes.
You say that we should be going out and doing things.
Yes.
I find when I go out now, I get so stupid, I can hardly get my groceries.
Well, it's not for everybody. It's for those who can
okay.
Be of service. But if you've become totally useless, that's sort of out of the door, isn't it?
It is in my my perspective.
That's fine. Don't worry about it. If as long as you're becoming totally useless, I can't ask more of you than that.
I'm totally, totally useless.
Thank God. We've got a potential winner here. You know what we're going to do is like a salesman in an insurance office. So somebody wakes, we'll ring a bell. You know, this shit is not easy. This, you know, there are people that are constitutionally forced to do it the difficult way through bhakti and through suffering. They need to suffer. And Dia, poor, poor Dia. 9 years of endless pain, of empathizing with people that were dying or demented and going through pain and not being treated well by civilization. The pain became so much for her and still is. Sometimes she has to withdraw totally. And this is a very severe task for these people, these sensitive people that are breaking open, feeling all the emotions coming out. Killing them. It seems like it's killing them. But that passes. But it's not necessarily the case that you have to go through all of this before you awaken. So far as I know, there's no set course. There's no sequence that's foolproof. I didn't go through all of this stuff before I awoke. I went through psychotherapy for 8 years prior to it. But I didn't have the extreme amount of suffering that some of you have. Maybe that's yet to come for me. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you.
But other people can do it just by being quietistic, being empty, going deep inside in meditation. Seeing that inner sense of emptiness, the void. Finding the sense of presence that fills the void. Asking themselves, who am I? And finding nothing there. And then saying, hey, there's nobody home. Wow, I don't have to do anything anymore. The whole world is a bunch of crap. It's not real. How about Sri Ram, J. Ram, J. J. Kahaya? I believe that's how it's pronounced, Kahaya. Sh- Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram, Ramo, something like that. Notice that Lakshmi is camouflaged today. The writing that she's hiding says, "Today you bored me to death." Oh, there she is. You want to go? Okay. Oh. See? For a few minutes there, you bored me to death. Okay.
Thank you.
Who are you? Look into your heart. Look into your mind. Who's there? Who's knowing this? Who's listening to this and cognizing this? Who is it that knows what I'm saying? Who is the knower? Where is the I? Where is your I? Find your I. Is there anybody in there? Anybody with form and substance? Or is the knower without form, without substance? Without existence in this world, without properties. Is the knower unknown? This kind of questioning is as deep as you can get in Advaita. Does the knower have form? Is the knower a thing? Now for the academic part of satsang. From Nisargadatta. There's going to be a test at the end of the month. It'll be an open book test, so you don't have to study. I don't want to make it too hard on you. Page 58 of Prior to Consciousness. Maharaj. You live in the house, but the house is not yourself. Similarly, the knowledge I am is in the body. But it is not the body. Questioner, I do not fully understand it. With the mind, you will never understand. You are not the mind, nor the words, nor the meaning of the words. I expound the knowledge of the self to the self, but you accept it as the knowledge of your body. You are not the mind, nor the words, nor the meaning of the words. You are not the mind. You are not the words, nor the meaning of the words. I expound the knowledge of the self to the self. He's not talking about the I am, the sense of presence. He's saying, I'm expounding the knowledge of the self to the self, but you accept it as the knowledge of your body. He's talking to the absolute, and we'll get to that in a second. He says, I am completely detached from the body and the consciousness which is within the body. Nevertheless, because of the disease, the unbearable suffering of the body is being experienced through consciousness. It is unbearable, but since I am detached from both the body and the consciousness, I am able to speak to you. It is something like that fan. He points to a fan. The breeze is there and the sound is there also. It is the same way in me. The vital breath is there and the sound is emanating. But all this happening is unbearable. The suffering has to be endured. In other words, he's comparing himself to a thing, a fan, with the breeze and the sound. And he says, yeah, I'm experiencing it. It's pretty unbearable, but it's not me. When the knowledge I am is not there, do you perceive or observe anything? Knowingness is knowledge. And no knowingness is also knowledge. But it has no form. If you equate it with the body, only then you say that you are a male or female. In the absence of knowledge, the question of I know or I do not know does not arise. When you understand what I have said about knowledge, you will fully identify with that. That's very difficult to understand. This is a central passage in Advaita, in Nisargadatta's Advaita. When the knowledge I am is not there, do you perceive or observe anything? Without the I am, is there anything whatsoever? Knowingness is knowledge, and no knowingness is also knowledge. But it has no form. That is, neither knowingness has form, and it's knowledge, or not knowingness. Neither knowledge has no form. If you equate it with the body, only then does it have properties of being male or female. Now we're going to go a step further in his next quote. October 2, 1980, page 59. The questioner says, and this is going to become a little complicated because Nisargadatta is, in this passage, apparently identifying the ego with the I am, which is not typically what he does. But the transformation might be poor or something else. But listen to this. The questioner, I want to give up this ego, but I don't know how. Maharaj, this is important now. What is the measurement and color of this ego that you want to give up? What have you understood about this ego? In other words, what form does this ego have that you're trying to give up? What does it look like? Does this concept have any existence whatsoever? Questioner, it's a false conviction of the mind. The guy, Maharaj, asks, what have you understood about the ego? The questioner says, it's a false conviction of the mind. Now Maharaj goes from the ego, and he says, what's the form of this ego that you're talking about, that you want to get rid of? Maharaj then says, it is a pinch in my fingers, this I am-ness. But all the scriptures, the 16 shastras, the 18 puranas, and the 4 Vedas have been screaming and shouting, trying to describe this Brahman. He's now equating the I am-ness with God or Brahman. And before he was talking about the ego. So we got to be careful here. All those praises are only for this tiny pinch of I am. The moment you start making a design of that I am-ness, you are getting into deep waters. This incense holder is silver, and you have knowledge that it is silver. Listen to this carefully. What is the shape, color, or design of that knowledge? This incense holder is silver, and you have knowledge that it is silver. But what is the shape, color, or design of the knowledge of the color of this of the incense holder? Does it have form? Or is it formless? Where does it reside, this knowledge? If all knowledge is formless, could there be a form, design, or color to the knowledge I am? And maybe now he's talking about the ego. If all knowledge is formless, could there be a form, design, or color to the knowledge I am? Could it be subject to sin or merit? In other words, I know that I am. That is my knowledge. I exist. But what's the nature of this knowledge that I am? Does it have form? Can it be perceived? Can you witness the knowledge at all? And what is the relationship between the knowledge I am and my existence? I exist, I know that, in this manifest world. I know I exist. But what about this knowledge that I exist? What is its nature? Does it have any form? Does it have any substance? What's its reality? And then he says, in this timeless ether, the touch of I am-ness is not there. He's saying in the great void, when that touch of I am-ness comes, the void does not perceive it. It does not touch the void. It's manifest in the great void, not the one we perceive, but the one we are. Is beyond any form. It's purely knowledge. Questioner, is it not true that out of compassion for the ignorant, the Yani expounds knowledge? Maharaj, you can say whatever you like. There's no such thing as compassion in that state. I have elevated you to that state where you should know that you are the very illuminant of everything. And the love to be is also therein. When I lead you there, why do you ask me such questions? How do you know anything? And here we're getting into the crux again. How do you know anything? The questioner says, through the mind. No. The knowingness recognizes the mind. The mind cannot recognize consciousness. You are overpowered by sleep. You wake up. Who recognizes this awakening? Prior to mind, the knowingness principle is there. Prior to mind, the knowingness principle is there. Prior to knowingness, there is the priormost principle, which knows consciousness. So we have knowingness. I know I exist. It's an essential part of the I am-ness. But where is that knowingness residing? The knowingness itself has no form. But this is jnana. Jnana is knowing. That's what jnana means, knowing. And prior to this knowledge is that principle that knows, which is not part of the I am or part of the manifest universe. He calls it the absolute, the Parabrahman, the basic ability to know. So we have the basic ability, the witness, whatever we want to call it, the knowingness, or the knower, you might say. And then knowingness, which is the knowledge that we exist. And then we have the manifestation, which is the I am-ness and all of consciousness. This is the most subtle point that you'll ever run across in Nisargadatta, and eventually you have to get it. In the final analysis, out of the absence of knowledge, knowledge was born, and knowledge delivered the world and all sentient beings and all things. In the final analysis, out of the absence of knowledge, out of that ether he talked about, out of the void, knowledge was born, and knowledge delivered the world, gave us this world, all beings and all things. Consciousness is suffused with knowledge. Satchitananda, existence, knowledge, bliss. Existence without knowledge is not existence. The one who enters spirituality is like a cold water which is put on the fire. When you put it on the fire, the bubbles start rising, and in due course it starts boiling. That boiling stage is something like the Siddhaka entering the highest class of spirituality. At the boiling point, he likes to talk a lot, put a lot of questions. When the fire is applied continuously, the boiling stops and simmering takes place. That is a stage where one acquires knowledge in spirituality. After listening to these talks, will you be able to go into quietude? I have my doubts about that, because you still like to please your pampered mind. If you really understood what I say, does it matter if you please your mind or not? I have told you that presently you are like the warmth in the body. He was saying, presently I have been telling you that you are the I am, the warmth, like the warmth in the body. But then he says, what is Parabrahman like? That is the absolute. But what is the Parabrahman like? I told you you are the I am. But what is the Parabrahman like? The Parabrahman does not experience this warmth of I amness at all. If you understood, this puzzle will be solved for you. In other words, in the emptiness, in the void, there's just the principle residing there, of the ability to know. And then the knowledge comes, I am. It's born. You wake up and the world appears spontaneously, out of nothingness. Just like the Big Bang Theory talks about the universe coming out of nothing. Each day you are born anew. This knowingness comes. You were not knowing, you were dead asleep. Then the knowingness comes from nowhere, and suddenly the world is born. But that principle that's able to perceive knowingness, it must always be there, because it witnesses the coming and going of knowing and of the world and of us. After understanding this, if one becomes a jnani, that consciousness principle and body is available, and they will be involved in the emotional field also. It will give full vent to crying, and it will also enjoy whatever situation is there. Such a jnani is not going to suppress any expressions of emotions which spontaneously come out of this consciousness and body apparatus. Such a jnani is not going to suppress or suppress any expressions of emotions which spontaneously come out of this consciousness and body apparatus. You, the Parabrahman, associate yourself with Joan, the body-mind, with Matthew, the body-mind, with John, the body-mind, and Tina, the body-mind. But that's not you. It's a spontaneous arising in emptiness that has nothing to do with you as the Absolute. But the Absolute is not going to repress any of the emotionality and spontaneity that arises out of the I amness and out of your body-mind apparatus. Normally, people suppose that a jnani should suppress all emotional outbursts. This is not correct. With your standpoint in the Absolute, you are not concerned with the feelings and instinctive outbursts of the apparatus. A jnani does not volitionally participate. It is spontaneously happening While an ignorant person is deeply involved in that, he assumes everything is real. For the Yani, the warmth, the I am, is also unreal. So whatever happens in the realm of warmth is unreal. All devotion, all liking and love is dissolved for Yani, but whatever he does is for others. Now this has been really tough. This is the crux of Nisargadatta. Read those two chapters over and over again. Maybe read them onto an MP3 player so you can hear it read over and over and over and over again. I hope to come to some other places where it's as clearly stated. And we'll just go into it again and again and again and again until you get it. I know it's hard to get. How many fully understand? Two. Okay. I'll send you a certificate of enlightenment. That'll be $25, please. Any questions? Now let's have a final chant, and Joanne, you choose it.
Jayabha Bhagavan.
Take care. I love you all.